at the hands of my son. One of my sons may kill him. For the time being, let me promise to hand over my sons so that Kamsa will give up this immediate threat. And if in due course of time Kamsa dies, I shall have nothing to fear. Omagina Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shakaya Chakshur Unmulitam Tasma Shri Guru Namaha. So, it's a very interesting verse. Quite a short purport. But here we see fate or providence and how sometimes fate can be brutal. As we see here, Vasudeva is put into this life and death predicament where Kamsa is this very powerful evil king. He wants to kill his wife, and Vasudeva has to think very quickly, what am I going to do? Because Kamsa, you know, the nature of demons is they're very unpredictable and they're very cruel, and so it's a very harrowing situation for Vasudeva. So we can see in this situation where fate has taken a turn, a sudden twist. And when that happens, then it's very clear. Here it is, fate staring you in the face. But actually, fate is there all the time. And most of the time, you can't detect it. Just like, you know, fate may decide what you will have for breakfast this morning. Maybe you were planning to have toast, but something happens and you have to have something else. So fate is always acting. And most of the time, we don't really think anything of it. It's only when it takes a really drastic turn that suddenly we realize that we're in its hands. We always have been. I remember one time I had a friend, he was an American, and he was staying in England. He'd been in England for some time, and he'd become completely attached to living in England, living with us, working there. And then one day he was told, I'm not sure if he wanted citizenship or if he wanted to extend his visa, but one day he had to go for an interview where they would tell him whether he could stay or not. And he said, I have a date with fate. And I remember we were all thinking, yeah, date with fate, well, this is really crucial, you know, what's going to happen? And then I crossed my mind, well, all the time is a date with fate. It's just that sometimes it's prominent and sometimes there's not. So Vasudeva now has been put into one of these times where suddenly he has to make a fast decision. What is he going to do? There's so many possible outcomes. You can see he's weighing it up here. You know, maybe Kamsa will die. You know, I mean, people die all the time, so maybe Kamsa will die. Or maybe I won't get any sons. And if a son is born, then maybe he'll kill Kamsa because there's that prophecy. So he's thinking all these different possibilities. What should I do? And the thing with Vasudeva is that he has faith in Krishna. He has faith in the Lord. And this is such a very important quality to have, because if you have faith in the Lord, then when fate does take its turn, when you're suddenly confronted with a reverse in your fortune or whatever it is, you can understand that Krishna is doing this for some reason. It's not, nothing happens for no reason. There is no such thing as an accident, actually. Sometimes we hear, oh, someone had an accident, but we have to understand, if a wise person understands, there's no such thing as an accident. Sometimes we're put into these situations to make us think, to make us reflect, what am I doing? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What is the purpose of my activity? So someone who has faith in Shastra, then they understand, okay, for some reason Krishna has put me into the situation. I have to just calmly accept. I have to rationally think out what are the options that I can take here. What is the best thing to do in a Krishna conscious way? What will be the best outcome for everybody? including the person who's persecuting you, perhaps if you're being persecuted, what is the best thing to do? But a person who doesn't have that faith, for them, life is frightening. For most people, actually, life is a very frightening thing. When you grow up in school, you kind of have a false sense of security when you're living with your parents and they're taking care of your needs, and you go to school and you don't really have to think about much. You just go along with the herd, do what everyone else does. And only when finally you leave school and suddenly you find yourself out on your own, you suddenly realize that life is not exactly what you thought it was, or suddenly, responsibilities come along that you hadn't really anticipated. And then, what are you going to do? Sometimes it's worrying. I remember before I got married, how am I going to handle marriage? Oh my God. And then we got married, and then we had a son. I was like, now I'm a father, parenthood. How do you deal with parenthood? All these different challenges that come to you that you never really thought about, and suddenly you're confronted with them, and what are you going to do? So, for people outside that don't have any understanding of God, of Krishna consciousness, then it's frightening. And the world is a frightening place right now, because at any time, just recently, for instance, a couple of years ago, there was this big threat of nuclear war with North Korea. And many people thought we were going to Third World War, this could be it. The final, the big one, you know. Then what was the latest thing? Iran. Iran is the latest thing. There's a threat of war with Iran or Iran. And then there's California, big earthquakes. Is it the big one? And people are very insecure because they don't know, because especially with this modern system whereby people believe in evolution, people believe in a blind faith in science, and they read in the newspapers that this could be the end of humanity. And people are freaking out. Oh my God, the end of humanity? You know, it could come just around the corner. But for a person who has faith in Krishna consciousness, we understand that humanity never ends, actually. There's never an end to humanity. There's always going to be human beings. There will always be earthly planets where souls can come to take birth and perform various activities and work out their karma. So even if we face death, sometimes we pray to Krishna, please save us. Save us doesn't necessarily mean that we're saved from death. None of us are saved from death, ultimately. But what it means is that we're placed into a position that's favorable for our Krishna consciousness. So if we die, then we get reborn as a devotee. So many different possible outcomes. So for the devotee, there's much less to fear. But you have to have faith. It's very important. So here, Kamsa's got this immediate threat to his wife. But he takes things step by step. He considers the different possible outcomes. And depending on Krishna, he comes up with one that, okay, I'll hand over my sons, because there's not an immediate threat. The immediate threat is my wife. If I promise to hand my sons over, then that threat is abated, and then in the future we'll see what to do. And for people without the faith, then the fear that they have actually lasts their whole life. There's always anxiety. You find sometimes people, they have nervous breakdowns. I remember Kadambakana Maharaj once was telling about how his father, he was a businessman, and he had all sorts of different business ventures, and he was living beyond his means. You know, that means that you're spending more money than you're earning, and you're accumulating more and more debt. And gradually, when you do that, you have a credit card, you overspend on the credit card so that you get another credit card, or you borrow, take more money and you borrow from Peter to pay Paul, and you do all these kinds of crazy things to try and stave off the ultimate problem. And sometimes you can't. And so he was saying, Kadambakana Maharaj was saying with his father, that at a certain point he had a nervous breakdown. And he went in to see him. And his father was just like in bed. And he said to him, I'm finished. I'm finished. I'm finished. And Kunama Kanamo said, and he was. He was finished. And so for a materialist, this can happen. There's so much anxiety, so much fear of what can happen. And then the next thing, it becomes too much for the mind, and the mind crashes, and then it's just, I'm finished. You can't function anymore. So, it's very difficult. And it's not like it's a secret that there's a saying, man proposes and God disposes. We have our idea of what we're going to do. We make our plans, and they may or may not turn out. That's up to God whether or not. If it's within our karma, if we deserve it, our plan may work or it may not. So it's not like there's any secret there. It's commonly known, but it's just we don't have faith. And we've seen historically, sometimes when a reversal comes along, like I'm reminded of Prabhupada when he first started his preaching mission, he opened the center in Jhansi. And so I think, as far as I remember, some ladies had given him a property. It was a very nice property with some land around it. And so he cleaned it up and started to preach. And that was where he made his first disciple, actually, in Jhansi. And mission was going on. He was going out and preaching. And then when the property was very nicely developed, these ladies turned around and said, oh, sorry, we need our property back. And suddenly Prabhupada had no place to do his preaching from. And I think that was for Prabhupada, that was a very key thing, because later on when the devotees started to get properties, acquiring properties, sometimes people come along and they say, oh, I want to donate this to you. And the devotees go, oh, that's very nice, you know, we can use this. But then there are some strings attached that, you know, we'll give it to you on a lease or whatever. And Prabhupada would make it very clear, no leases. You just either they give it outright without any strings attached, or we're not interested. Because that's what happens. People take advantage. People took advantage of Prabhupada. He did a lot of work to fix up a place. And then they say, oh, sorry, we've changed our mind. We need the place back. So sometimes the devotees in the early days, they were a little bit foolish and a little bit irresponsible. And they would enter into deals with strings attached. And then we'd be in a big mess, like in Mumbai and different places. So sometimes something happens, and it's a big reverse in our life. And we don't know what to do. But oftentimes, it leads to greater success. I remember also back in the 70s, I think it was, in Uganda, there were many Indian people living in Uganda. It's an African country. And they had lots of successful businesses. They lived in big houses. They were wealthy. And then one general came along, and he took over the government. His name was Idi Amin. And he took over the government of Uganda. And then very quickly, he decided to throw out all the Indians. And he gave them, I don't know, like 24 hours to pack whatever they could into a bag and leave. And so for many of these Indian families, it suddenly came like a shot out of the blue. All they could do was just whatever they could stuff into a suitcase, they stuffed it into a suitcase, and then they just had to leave. They were herded onto planes and flown, I think, to England, because in those days, many Indians had English passports. When the British gave up India, they allowed Indian people to have British passports if they wanted. And so many of them still had that option to get English passports. So many of them came to England. So I remember there's one devotee, Mahaman. Mahaman is a very prominent devotee in the Indian Yatra now. Maybe some of you know him. He was one of those who was in Uganda, and he suddenly had to flee and come to England. And practically speaking, all of those families that fled from Uganda, within 10 to 15 years, they'd remade their fortunes. Some of them even better than they were before. So sometimes it appears that there's a big reverse, and we're really Our situation is compromised. We don't know what to do. It seems like it could be the end. And then you're put into a completely different situation. And somehow or another, fate again reveals its hand. And you can turn that around and actually make it into a very successful thing. So it's why it's so important to have faith in Krishna consciousness. Because according to Shastra, as soon as you're born, your life is already, practically speaking, mapped out, right? We all have a certain amount of breaths. One of those breaths are finished, then we die. That's why the yogis, they slow their breathing process down. Their pranayama systems slow the breathing down so they can live for longer and longer and longer. And in that way, in the old times, they would try to practice self-realization. Because they understood there's only a certain amount of breaths. I have to slow them down so my meditation can be extended. And then there's a certain amount of wealth. Everyone has a predestined amount of wealth. A certain amount of happiness. A certain amount of distress. It's already written out. I remember when I lived in South India, I met a nadi reader. Nadis are like palm leaves. And maybe you may have heard of Chitragupta. Anyone heard of Chitragupta? Chitragupta is like the record keeper of the demigods. And there are some temples in India, I can't remember where, maybe in Kanchipuram, where when you go into the temple, there's a little side temple of Chitragupta. And you go, before you go into the temple, you go to see Chitragupta and you tell him your name, your gotra, where you come from, etc. And he keeps a little record so that when you die, it comes up, you know, oh yeah, he came to the temple, he was there. So like that, there's a record kept. We all have a record somewhere or another. There is some office, just like if you go to Krishnanagar, to the FRO, you'll find these piles and piles of papers that have probably been there for 300 years or something. So there's a record for every one of us. And there are people who you can go to now and read your record, right? And they're called Nadi readers. In Puri, there's the copper plate Baba. It's the same thing. He has a copper plate, and you go to him, and he asks you some questions, and he checks the time and the planet positions and everything like this, and then he locates your Nadi or your reading. And then he will tell you what your previous births were, what is happening in this birth, why you're going through the things you're going through in this birth, and then he'll give you a recommendation what you can do. So when I was living in Bangalore, not the copper plate Baba, but there are people in Tamil Nadu who are Nadi readers, and they have these reams of these palm leaves, and you go to see them and you tell them your name, gotra, all this kind of stuff, and then they look and they find, and they get a palm leaf out, and all the letters on the palm leaf change according to whoever it is that comes there. And then you can find out. So then he was saying, oh, from your previous life, you have this karma. And if you do this thing, if you offer a golden, if you offer a cow to a Brahmin on this date, and you do this thing and this thing, you can overcome the karma. And he said, if you haven't got a real cow, you can get a golden cow, a small golden cow, and you can offer it to a Brahmin and do all these different rituals. And I was kind of like, in the beginning, I was thinking, wow, that's amazing. And he told me things about my life which were, you know, who else would have known that? This is some guy I've never met in my life. I go tell him a few of my details, and suddenly he comes up with all this stuff about my life. And then he started to tell me about all these different things that I can do to free myself from this karma that I had from way back. So first of all, I thought, you know, maybe I'll do that. You know, but then I was thinking, well, the thing with it is that as soon as you chant Hare Krishna, then all of that is gone. You know, there's no need to do any special thing where you offer a Brahmin a cow at this day, at midnight on, you know, Tuesday or whatever it is. You don't have to do any of that. You just chant Hare Krishna. All of the obligations that you have to the forefathers and all these other karmas that you have that go way back, just by the process of chanting Hare Krishna and engaging in devotional service, that's all taken care of. So that's the fact that these things are predestined. We have a certain amount of wealth, a certain amount of fame, a certain amount of happiness, a certain amount of distress. Yet, even though we know that, we're told about it, man proposes, God disposes, we still think that we are in control of our lives. And that if I just do this thing, I'll get more money. Or if I just do that thing, I'll be more happy. Or whatever it is, we are kind of, there's a kind of like a fuse or something that's going on. And we get confused. And so many devotees get into business or get into different things and are thinking that just by making this deal or that deal. I remember I used to know a devotee who was like a millionaire. He'd been a millionaire. And then something happened and he lost a lot of his money. And he told me one day, he said, I just want to be a millionaire again. If I just do it this way or I just do that thing, you know, I'm sure I can do it. And he was so frustrated because... And I remember he would quote me from these different, these motivational gurus who tell you, you know, you can be a millionaire. There was a famous one in ISKCON. Do you remember? What was it? Six Steps or something? Can't remember. Covey? Stephen Covey, right? What was it? 12 Steps or something? Whatever. They have these kind of this formula. You follow this formula, you will become a successful and a millionaire like I was, you know? And the funny thing is, many of them become billionaires just by selling the book. But they don't. What people don't realize is if it's not your karma to be a millionaire, then no matter how many techniques you follow, no matter how many self-help books you buy, you're not going to become a millionaire. And so I remember this devotee was like frustrated because he was doing all the things that he should be doing, but the millions weren't coming back. So this is the conundrum. This is the... we have to have that faith. Prabhupada used to say that Krishna is no poor man. Krishna has unlimited wealth. And we've seen from Prabhupada's example, Prabhupada was a businessman. He had his pharmaceutical company, his business. But somehow or another, it never really took off. Right? He was living in Ahmedabad. He was traveling around India, trying to make his business successful, but it never quite took off. And he was doing his duty. He had his family. He has children. And they were okay. They were comfortable, but it never really took off. And then, when Prabhupada renounced everything and just went on his own with nothing to America, then we found the success he had was incredible. Incredible success. And here we are as a proof of that. Everywhere around the world, Krishna consciousness is there because of Prabhupada's faith in Krishna consciousness, because of Prabhupada's faith in his Guru Maharaj. He gave up the business. And sometimes he would say, I'm an old man, but you're young men. Why would you bother to go into business and try and make a whole bunch of money when you can spend your energy for Krishna? Just try to understand that your happiness and distress and your money, etc., is already sorted out. It's already preordained. It's already destined. There's no need to work for that. Work for Krishna. And we see that. So many devotees who have actually just surrendered to Krishna consciousness and just surrendered to trying to spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna's taking care of them. And Krishna always does take care, but you only if you have faith. Krishna's like in our heart and he's watching and he's seeing. Guru Govinda Maharaj used to say he sees the whisperings of our heart. The innermost desires that we have, those little secrets that we keep in our hearts. And he sees that. And when he sees that we just want to serve him, and we just do that service, even though there's no future in terms of economic development, you know, there's no guarantee that anything is going to be successful, but he sees that that is our goal, that is our desire. Well, I just want to do something for Krishna. I just want to do something to spread Krishna consciousness. Then sometimes it may be difficult, like Prabhupada in the beginning. It wasn't easy. When Prabhupada first came to New York for that first year, no disciples, he had his stuff stolen. It wasn't easy. But he still had that faith and he carried on. And then he passed over that difficulty and then Krishna sent the result. Krishna guarantees he will do that. So that's what Prabhupada wants. That's why Prabhupada started this movement. Especially in the West with young people, young Americans. He used to say, you young Americans, you can do anything. You have no restrictions. You can do anything. So spend your time in Krishna consciousness. Study my books. Preach. Develop projects. Write. Whatever it is you can do, do that. Do it for Krishna. And Krishna will take care of you. He'll take care of all your needs. And that was how the movement functioned in the very beginning. Devotees joined and just went out on the streets selling books, doing anything. Just Prabhupada used to say, rack your brain to spread this Krishna consciousness. Devotees were racking their brains. If you think about those devotees that came first from America to England to start the yatra in England and in Germany and Amsterdam, they were grihastha couples. They weren't even sannyasis. Grihastha couples, newly married grihastha couples. Prabhupada sent them to Europe and they started the whole Krishna consciousness movement. It wasn't even Prabhupada himself. But because they were acting just completely in line with Prabhupada, because they only did what was recommended by Prabhupada, because they had complete faith in Prabhupada. You must know that story about, there's a story where Prabhupada wanted the Krishna book published. You know that story? Shyamasundar had been made friends with George Harrison, and Prabhupada was publishing Krishna book, and he needed money to publish the book. So he asked Shyamasundar to ask George for a donation for the Krishna book printing. And Shyamasundar was like worried because he had this relationship with George Harrison, which was very friendly, and he'd never really asked anything from George. George always just gave, he never asked. And he was worried that if he asked, especially for some big amount, that George would think that we were just after him for his money and that it wasn't really a friendship, it wasn't really a relationship. So Prabhupada said to Shyamasundar, he said, don't worry, I will take care, Krishna will take care, you just ask. So Shyamasundar went for this dinner. George Harrison was there and many guests were there, and they were having dinner, sitting around talking, and it was getting late, and then Shyamasundar realized, I've got to ask. So then finally he went to George, he said, George, Prabhupada has a favor to ask you. And George said, oh, what is that? He says, he'd like you to pay for Krishna book. And George is like, oh, how much? I think it was something like $360,000. That's a lot of money. You remember how? $22,000, okay, but a lot of money. $22,000. Okay, not 360, that's the credit. $22,000, but in those days, in the 70s, it was a lot of money. So when Shyamasundar told him $20,000, George suddenly had this look like, you know, oh my God, you know. And then just as he had that look, there was this bolt of lightning, and the lights went out, and everyone was in darkness, you know. And then a few seconds later, the lights come on, and George has this big smile on his face. And he said, with a message like that, how can I refuse? So, so Krishna is amazing, right? Krishna can just change everything just like that. He can just create the circumstances. So Shyamasundar wasn't sure. He didn't want to do it, right? You know, if it had been up to him, he wouldn't have done it. But because Prabhupada insisted, you ask him, Krishna will take care. He was like, okay. You know, and he was just about putting his relationship with George on the line. And then he saw how Krishna just immediately interceded and just cleared the whole thing up. So that's what happens when you have faith in Krishna. Even though it may appear that, oh my God, you know, what's going to happen? How am I going to survive? What am I going to do? No, no, I can't. I don't have time. I can't surrender to Krishna. I've got to, at least let me get my business out of the way. Let me make some money. Let me get the family secure. And then, you know, then I'll think about it. You know, and like, how much time goes by, you know, how, because it never happens like that. There's always some reversal. There's always some difficulty. Some unexpected expense comes up. And then you're thrown back. But we can see. There are so many examples. There was another example where there was an incident where some sannyasis had been thrown out of ISKCON. And do you remember who that was? Who were they? Yeah. They'd been thrown out and they were moving around, right? They didn't know what to do. They were sincere devotees, but somehow or another, they got thrown out. And they were moving around and then they were in a park outside some museum somewhere. And one of the devotees, he had some shoes which were too tight. No, he didn't have any shoes, right? He didn't have any shoes. And they were preaching. Some person came along. It was Indradumna Maharaj, I think. Before he was a devotee, he was in the museum and he was looking at this exhibit of Krishna's pastimes in the museum. And he was asking the curator of the museum more information, and the curator didn't know. So then he came out of the museum, was going down the steps, went into the park, And there were these devotees. So he meets the devotees, he's talking to them, and one of the devotees doesn't have any shoes. And he's making the point that, you know, Krishna can provide everything. He says, what, even shoes? And then, just then, a hippie comes along, and he says, oh my God, my feet are killing me. These shoes are too small. Does anyone want some shoes? And the devotee says, what size? He says, you know, size 10. He says, that's just my size. He says, yeah, man, take them. And like, he's like, oh my God, you know, just right there. They're talking about Krishna provides anything, and suddenly Krishna just provides it. So, you know, these miracles. Another time, Shamsunda was walking along, I think, in London, and they had no money for the rent for the temple, and the landlord was going to come along and close them down and kick them out. And just then, a whole bunch of money just appeared out of nowhere on the road, just blowing in the wind. And he picked it up, and it was just the right amount of money for the rent for the temple. It was a sack. Exactly the right amount of money, yeah. It's like, you know, hello, what's going on here? Krishna is sending. So that's why we should have faith. He provides, you know, Krishna provides for all the animals. He provides for the elephant. You know, it's described that if you want to own an elephant, it's like a lakh a day or whatever. It's a very expensive thing to own an elephant. But the elephants in the jungle, Krishna's providing. Krishna's providing for everyone. He won't provide for his devotees. If we just surrender to him, to doing his will, he's not going to take care of us? Of course he will. But he won't make it necessarily easy. You've got to work at it, and you've got to have faith, and that faith will be tested. Are you going to give up and say, no, I'm not, this is too dangerous, I have to take this into my own hands, and I have to be responsible? Right? I remember one time I was working in Spain, and I was trying to develop a Varnashram project, and had no money, and we didn't know where the money was going to come from. And some devotees were telling me, you know, Prabhu, you're being irresponsible, you've got a wife and children, just get a job, earn some money, what are you doing? You know, how can you be so irresponsible? And I was thinking, well, you know, if I go and get a job, then forget it. Then I'm not going to be able to do anything else. You know, you got a job, you've got to work 9 to 5, and you just take care of the family, and what else can you do? So I didn't. And Krishna took care. I remember one time we had no money left, and my wife even was running out of clothes. And one devotee came along one day, and he had this box, and he said, they've got these old clothes, do you want them? I said, yeah, sure, okay, give them. So we brought the box, and we opened it up, and it had these clothes, which are just the style that my wife likes, right? Punjabis and saris, just the style she likes. And we were like astonished, you know, Krishna. So it really is true, Krishna does take care. Just have to have faith. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Any comments or questions? Yes, Prabhuji.
You said that we should believe in Prabhupada, have faith in the Prabhupada's instructions. And you also said that we should rack our brains to spread Krishna consciousness. So I've had it told to me that racking our brains to spread Krishna consciousness means to reject Srila Prabhupada's instructions because they're for a different time and place circumstance, and that what he wants us to do is innovate and come up with new things. So can you say how that balances out?
Yeah, because when Prabhupada wrote his books, the purports, if you look at his purports, they cover every possible eventuality. If you have your Krishna gives us intelligence, and one of the reasons why Prabhupada spent all that time to write the purports in the books was for this reason, that after he's gone, we would have a resource which we can use. So although a specific instruction may not be relevant to a specific situation we're in, a general understanding of the principles will help us. And of course there's prayer also. And if we have faith and we pray, then Krishna reveals, he gives us the intelligence. Right? Like just like Prabhupada, when he came to America, he didn't know Americans, he didn't know anything about America, he didn't know how America operated. You know, he was kind of bewildered in the beginning, like that time he looked out of his window and he thought someone painted the city white. Right? Because it was a snowstorm. He'd never seen a snowstorm. He looked out of the window and everything's white. And it's like, someone has painted everything white? And then he found out that it was snow. So, you know, Prabhupada was completely like a neophyte in America, didn't know anything. But he had his faith. And sometimes one of the things that people say, you know, that made Prabhupada different to all the other Swamis was that he never compromised on his principles. He stayed dressed in the body dress. He ate with his fingers. And he introduced that to the devotees. He didn't start eating with a knife and fork and adopting Western dress. You know, many other people said, oh, you won't be able to. People, I think someone even said to Prabhupada, you'll never be able to be successful unless you adopt the Western habits. Prabhupada said, no, I'm not going to adopt the Western habits. They should adopt Vedic habits, the habits of Krishna and his devotees. So Prabhupada had that faith. And Prabhupada would deal with every single person as an individual. There was no, it's not like, sometimes we hear, you know, well, you have to come up with your business plan. You've got a project you want to do? Let's see your business plan. Let's see how this is going to pay for, you know, how it's going to pay for itself. Prabhupada didn't come to America with a business plan. Prabhupada just was there, and whoever came along, he would talk to them, and he would talk to them according to them, according to their mentality. Every single one of them was different. And he would preach to them according to what they could take and what they could understand. And he just relied on Krishna. Krishna sends me this person, then I'll engage him. Krishna sent this devotee called Surab, who was an architect. Prabhupada relied completely on Surab for his architecture. Someone else comes along who's a teacher, or someone comes along who's some other skill. Prabhupada would engage him in that skill. He wasn't looking, you know, first of all, I need a public relations man, and then I need an accountant, and then I need this and that. No, whoever came along, he would just use them, because that's what Krishna sent me right now. So I'll use that right now in Krishna's service, somehow or another. So, a Krishna conscious person, that's how we're supposed to act. That whatever circumstance presents itself, we take that whole body of work, that whole body of understanding of Srila Prabhupada's books, his examples, his letters, how he dealt with people, and then we see in this situation with these people, how can I apply it? So there is no blueprint, there's no kind of fixed way, but if we have faith in Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence, and if we read Prabhupada's books, that's why it's so important that we study Prabhupada's books, and all these other correspondences and his lectures, and that way you can cross-reference a whole set of information and a whole way in which you deal with people and deal in different situations. It's all there. It's just a question of accessing that resource and then praying to Krishna, please help me to apply this in this situation. And we've seen historically in so many ways it works. Is that okay? Prabhuji. Pass the mic back. Yeah.
Just wanted to add one story, since we were talking about those miracles that happened. Is in the very beginning, the devotees bought a dictaphone because they wanted to keep recording all of Prabhupada's talks. And so they were getting these tapes, and they were very expensive, and they were piling up, and nobody knew how to type. So they were like, you know, what are we going to do here? All these tapes, it costs a lot of money. We don't have a lot of money. Then all of a sudden, this boy shows up from university. He's doing his project on some new religion. So he shows up at the Hare Krishna temple and tells them what he's there, and they say, hey, can you type? He says, oh yeah, I typed, you know, gave some big number. So he sat down in his service for the whole time that he was doing this project was to type. So he typed, he got rid of all the tapes that were there. He finished his project and they never saw him again. He got rid of all the tapes and that was it.
Yeah. Miracles happen. We've seen it in Prabhupada's life and then so many devotees' lives. So, anyone else? Any other thing? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi Ribo. Oh, it was in San Francisco, was it?
Yeah.